This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden delivering Thanksgiving meals to firefighters today on Nantucket. What he's thankful for and hopeful for, the president?
I think with the grace of God, the good neighbors, with a little luck, we're going to get some more progress in the Middle East. And I'm really thankful for being able to get the first peace done on Lebanon.
But war in Ukraine with massive air raids today, nearly a million people losing power. President Zelensky calling for more air defense systems as winter intensifies. Syrian rebels capturing several villages in their first surprise offensive in years against President Bashar al-Assad's regime. Australia passing a social media ban for kids under 16. Social media companies could be fined up to $50 million for failing to take reasonable steps to keep kids off. No penalties for young people or parents who flout the rules. 21 pro-Palestinian protesters arrested for blocking the Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City. They delayed the parade for about 5 minutes. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Did you know you can cut your own holiday tree from a Wisconsin state forest? With more, here's Civic Media's Lisa Hale.
Wisconsinites who want the experience of trekking through the woods, finding the perfect tree, cutting it down and taking it home can do so from some Wisconsin state forest for just a small fee. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says Wisconsinites can harvest a holiday tree or evergreen boughs from certain state forests, such as the Peshtigo State Forest in Marinette County. Permits vary, but average at about $5 per tree. I'm Lisa Hale for Civic Media News.
You could find out more information on the Wisconsin DNR's website. A new survey highlights some facts about Thanksgiving meals. With more, here's Civic Media's Terry Barr.
A new survey is revealing some interesting things about the food you may be sharing this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. It includes the calories you'll consume. The Harris poll shows most of you say there's almost always turkey, cranberries, and pumpkin pie. But the survey indicates 65% don't even like some of these holiday dishes, yet you'll eat it because it's tradition. The poll also reveals a surprising number of people say they actually prefer eating leftovers during the weekend rather than the actual holiday meal. One result which may not be surprising, the average number of calories consumed during your holiday dinner. It's around 4,500. That's about twice the daily calories suggested by any health expert. I'm Terry Barr.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go. Download the free Civic Media app on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. From the Western Wisconsin Civic Media Newsroom, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Packers football tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers playing on Thanksgiving, a tradition that dates back to the 1920s. They host the Dolphins, who feature two of the fastest wide receivers, Tariq Hill, Jalen Waddle, led by quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, Packers defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley.
I mean, you'll see him throw the ball down the field and hit some big plays, but then you'll see a lot of catch and run. We're in rhythm. He's throwing the ball. And it's not just the receivers, it's the backs, too. You know, creating some mismatches, getting the ball in space, and letting their guys kind of catch and run. So they do a really good job with that.
College football, the Badgers host the Minnesota Gophers tomorrow at 11 a.m. Luke Fickell says he won't bring in a special speaker to explain the tradition of playing for the Paul Bunyan Axe.
I'm not a guy that brings in people to speak. You know, I mean, we've got guys within this program. We've got guys that it's meant the world to them. They've bled it. There's a lot of guys that you know, are new here that if they don't understand, shame on them, because we talked about it in fall camp. We talked about it in spring football.
That's head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Mostly cloudy with a few flurries and spotty snow showers. Only trace amounts are expected to stick and winds begin to whip tonight, bringing a blustery but sunny Friday with high temperatures only reaching the low 20s. Plus wind chills on top of that will be feeling more like the single digits. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 24 degrees.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, we get a sneak peek at the Hawktua Girls' new reality show. And I welcome Discover Wisconsin host Andrea Belke and from National Lampoon, Jamie Kaler and Jeff Tully.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. This is the talk of La Crosse. Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you're having a wonderful Thanksgiving Day. Got Jess P.S. on the board here, and we are grateful.
Yes, we are.
We are so very grateful.
Mm-hmm.
I've been practicing.
You've been practicing. That's wonderful. I'm really glad to hear it.
I'm grateful to hear it. See, my teeth no longer clench when I say it.
Not quite so much,
no,
at least. Progress. Baby steps.
It's not an exercise in perfection.
Right. It's
being
just
grateful
constant.
Is
an exercise, getting stronger with each practice.
You know, I CrossFit.
Sure.
Okay, very rarely. It's just a lot of work. Hey, folks, thank you for tuning in. We did tell you that we are very grateful for you listening, but we're also very grateful for humanity. We want to celebrate humanity a little bit, right?
Yeah, man.
I'm always so down on the people sometimes.
Well, we spend a lot of time on this show looking at all the things that are kind of not going great. And we spend a lot of time focusing on the ways that humans tear each other down.
I like to think that maybe we're looking at that. Here's our failings, and perhaps this is what we can do better.
Okay, so we're taking a little bit of time now to take that step back and look at the good work that humans are doing to help us be better, to achieve that promise of humanity.
Is there a promise of humanity? Do you think, is that a philosophical effort, do you think? Or do you think there's literally a, like, every culture, every being, everyone thinks that we can be something better, bigger and better? And
I think part of being human is a recognition that we can always improve. We can always change, that we are not fixed into whatever we are at that moment, that we can always change. We can always grow. I think that that's a quintessentially human thing. And I think that it's really beautiful and wonderful that there are organizations in this world that are dedicated to recognizing the work that we're doing to build together and to build forward. Now,
beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you.
Very motivating.
I try to be sometimes.
Sometimes I think people just suck and it bothers me. But yes, let's endeavor for something greater.
Let's try.
Yes, let's do that. In that effort, the Nobel Prize.
Hey.
Not Nobel. Nobel Prize. Yeah. And it's not just a Peace Prize.
It's not just a Peace Prize. There are five other categories of the prize, being physics, chemistry, physiology, otherwise called medicine, and literature, with a sixth additional prize in economics.
Ooh.
Yeah. Should we get Maggie on for that?
I was going to say. You know, I got that all figured out. Tariffs fix everything. Next question. I want the prize in economics.
Well, you can't nominate yourself, Dom.
What?
That's part of the Nobel Prize. You cannot nominate yourself. You must be nominated by a designated nominator.
Ooh.
Yes.
Allow myself to introduce myself. So you have to a designated
nominator.
Nominator.
Yes.
Now, is there any requirement that the nominator themselves have won a Nobel Prize? Or is
no,
just,
but okay. Winning a Nobel Prize does automatically make you qualified to be a nominator.
Oh, man.
So all you have to do is first win the Nobel Prize in something else, and then you can nominate Maggie for
the economics. Oh, okay. Then I could totally do it.
Yeah. And all then, right. I don't know, maybe she can nominate you back. It can...
Yeah,
yeah, sure, that'll work.
One hand washes the other. They both wash the face. Forget about it.
Forget about it.
That's how we do it. All right, so we went to the NobelPrize.org.
Yes, we did.
There's lots of information.
There's a lot of good information here.
The Nobel Foundation established in 1900. The prizes are awarded in Sweden and Norway, and ceremonies mm-hmm. are on the 10th of December. Now, the prizes award in Sweden and Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why?
So... The Nobel Prize, it's named after a man, Alfred Nobel, who invented dynamite. Fun fact.
Boom.
I mean, boom,
thank
baby.
You. If it were not for that, my cartoons would never have been as
never
interesting
be the
as
same.
It.
No, absolutely no, no. not. And it was actually a bit of guilt over having invented something that really turned into a way for humans to engage in the worst things that we can do.
Oppenheimer's like, hold my coffee.
Right. A couple decades later. That led Alfred Nobel to dedicate the vast majority of his fortune to this enterprise in his final will and testament, to establishing this foundation that would recognize those who, during the preceding year, shall have conferred the greatest benefit to humankind.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very lofty,
isn't it?
And how do you gauge that? That's got to be tough,
right? So this is why it's a year long process for choosing the people who will be eligible for the awards, and then going through meticulously and choosing who will be given the Nobel Prizes in these seven categories.
Now I noticed that the economics category mm-hmm, was added mm-hmm. later.
Yes, it was.
By the Church of Central Bank of Sweden or something.
Yeah.
They were celebrating their 300th year.
Uh-huh.
And they gave
300
years.
That's a long time.
I want to get in that safe. You know what I mean? Hey, you got any old lock boxes from like 250 years ago
ooh,
that you ever
treasures.
Someone lost the key? And so the central bank gave a donation in honor of their 300th anniversary
mm-hmm.
to the Nobel Foundation, which then in turn created a economics Nobel Prize, right?
Correct. Gotcha. Correct.
Okay.
And I think that's part of a reflection of in 1900, the world economy was not quite so intertwined as it is now. And by the mid 1960s, it was also cross-exchanged that there was good work being done in economics that was benefiting not just these local communities, but the entirety of humankind.
Can I get the algorithm that makes me the most money ever? Oh, maybe that doesn't benefit mankind. It might just benefit
more than man. Yeah.
Okay, but if I were to follow the Central Bank of Sweden's.
Mm-hmm.
I could give money to the Nobel Foundation, maybe get a Nobel Prize in broadcasting.
Mm.
Uh-huh.
We'd have to donate a lot.
I got checks.
You got checks? They come bounce, man.
I mean, you know, just hang on to it. Post-dated, like 30 years. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
I got checks and I got credit.
Okay.
So, but the most recent one was the economics was
yes.
added in the 60s, but these other ones were original from 1900.
Right. They were written into the will. That's the founding document.
A will?
The will. Wow. The final will and testament of Alfred Nobel. Is the founding document for the Nobel Prize.
Interesting.
Yeah.
From the Nobel Prize, the Nobel Prize rewards science, humanism, and peace efforts. Peace, brothers. This is one of the central concepts in the will, as mentioned, of Alfred Nobel. Nobel. See, God. I read it and I say it.
You psych yourself out,
I know. And it also permeates the outreach activities that have been developed for the purpose of engaging, inspiring, and spreading knowledge about the prize, as well as the discoveries and achievements of the laureates. The laureates?
The now, laureates.
Is that the Dr. Seuss little guy with the...
That's the Lorax. Okay. So laureate comes from laurels.
I get so confused.
Like as if to rest on your laurels.
Oh,
It comes from ancient Greece. Back in the days of the original Olympic Games, they were every other year, a series of games held in Olympia to honor the god Zeus. And the prizes for these games were not a monetary value. It wasn't gold bars. It wasn't horses aplenty. It was a laurel wreath. So the laurel tree, the branches and leaves turned into a wreath that a person would wear on their head as a sign of status and honor, is where this all comes from. So Nobel laureates calls back on this heritage of not doing it for the money, shall we say, but doing it for the prestige and for the honor itself. While there is a cash prize for becoming a Nobel laureate, it's kind of expected that you're going to use that cash prize to further your work in humanitarian efforts, which isn't to say that they all do. Some of them...
Oh, come on, Vegas, baby!
Some of them do use their cash prizes as they see fit, and you know what? Good for them. But yes, Nobel laureate is how you refer to someone who has received a Nobel Prize.
And that's based on the tree and the branches and the leaves that people would put on their heads back in the day.
Correct.
Now, if you saw someone walk around with like branches and leaves in their head on their head,
it's nicely braided and it's made into something that is nice to wear. It's not like they just got twigs sticking out of their hair.
You know, I've woke up in some weird places.
Males.
The cash prize, 11 million Swedish krona.
Yes.
Which equates to just over 1 million US dollars.
Yeah, it's a pretty penny.
That is. But, you know, you think about some of the efforts and not just what we talked about briefly earlier, not just the folks that are on the document, but mm-hmm. all the supporters behind them and everything. I mean, all of a sudden, $1 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
No, it doesn't. And when it's spread between three recipients, a Nobel Prize can be awarded to one to three people. You know, you're already down to, I don't want to do math on the radio, but $300,000 each. Yeah. It's still a decent sum.
It'll pay the bar tab.
It'll definitely pay the bar tab, at least for a week. But it's not necessarily going to lead to the next huge discovery. It's a step.
It is a step. So we do have some of these folks. We're talking about the Nobel Prize in Physics, Nobel Prize in Chemistry, in Medicine, Literature, and the Peace Prize. You know, I'm a big fan of the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, you say it so much.
I just always think when I think of a Nobel Prize.
That's the first one that comes to mind.
The Nobel Peace Prize. And we should, let's take a look at that. And we have these other ones in physics, and I do like me some physics. We talked about the Large Hadron Collider before, right? I like physics and science and stuff. Literature, I love Mad Magazine. Don't read as much as I used to. You know, I was forced to read as a child.
So you're traumatized.
Not traumatized, just tough to get through. I mean, I read a lot. I mean, I read all day.
You read a lot of articles.
I do read a lot.
Yeah.
And so occasionally I'll read some historical document to kind of support an article, but it's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. Folks, this is the Dom Salve Show. We're going to talk about the Nobel Peace Prize and perhaps some of the other ones as well. Got Jess P.S. on the board. Hope you got some turkey in your mouth and a beer in your hand. Come back with us. We'll tell you all about it.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
After raising the kids, having weddings, and getting them settled, my wife and I prepared to spend our very first Christmas alone. They were all at the in-laws this year, so we watched old videos of them growing up. Went to bed early, and Christmas morning, my wife said, "Let's never do that again."
We're on our own again this year, but we're actually looking forward to it because we rented a private vacation home in Alexandria, Minnesota. Lakes, shopping, restaurants, and new memories.
Explore your holiday getaway options at explorealex.com.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Talk of La Crosse, Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
So happy Thanksgiving to us all. Got Jess P.S. on the board. We are talking Nobel Prizes and specifically my favorite, the Nobel Peace Prize. Because that's one that just automatically comes out of my mouth every single time.
Well, it's good that you've got peace on the mind.
I do. I am all about the peace. Yeah. Love and peace. Peace and love, baby. Can't get enough of that. The Nobel Peace Prize, I got the announcement here. And I was kind of eager. I'm like, oh, man, this is some heavy stuff.
Yeah,
I was not prepared, but I think it's important, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with you. Jess is going to help me out as well. The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2024 to the Japanese organization Nihon Hidankyo. Hidankyo, this grassroots movement of atomic bomb survivors from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, also known as Hibakusha, is receiving the Peace Prize for its efforts to achieve a world free of nuclear weapons and for demonstrating through witness testimony that nuclear weapons must never be used again. In response to the atomic bomb attacks of August 1945, a global movement arose whose members have worked tirelessly to raise awareness about the catastrophic humanitarian consequences of using nuclear weapons. Gradually, a powerful international norm developed stigmatizing the use of nuclear weapons as morally unacceptable. This norm has become known as the nuclear taboo. The testimony of the Hibakusha, the survivors of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, is unique in this larger context. These historical witnesses have helped generate and consolidate widespread opposition to nuclear weapons around the world by drawing on personal stories, creating educational campaigns based on their own experience, and issuing urgent warnings against the spread and use of nuclear weapons. The Hibakusha help us to describe the indescribable, to think the unthinkable, and to somehow grasp the incomprehensible pain and suffering caused by nuclear weapons. The Norwegian Nobel Committee wishes, nevertheless, to acknowledge one encouraging fact. No nuclear weapon has been used in war in nearly 80 years. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed. The extraordinary efforts of Nihon Hidankyo and other representatives of the Hibakusha have contributed greatly to the establishment of the nuclear taboo. It is therefore alarming that today this taboo against the use of nuclear weapons is under pressure. Yeesh. The nuclear powers are modernizing and upgrading their arsenals. New countries appear to be preparing to acquire nuclear weapons, and threats are now being made to use nuclear weapons in ongoing warfare. At this moment in human history, it is worth reminding ourselves what nuclear weapons are. The most destructive weapons the world has ever seen. Next year will mark 80 years since two American atomic bombs killed an estimated 120,000 inhabitants of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. A comparable number died of burn and radiation injuries in the months and years that followed. Today's nuclear weapons have far greater destructive power. They can kill millions and would impact the climate catastrophically. A nuclear war could destroy our civilizations. The fates of those who survived the infernos of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were long concealed and neglected. In 1956, local Hibakusha associations, along with victims of nuclear weapon tests in the Pacific, formed the Japan Confederation of A-Bomb and H-Bomb Sufferers Organizations. The name was shortened in Japanese to Nihon Hidankyo and would become the largest and most influential Hibakusha organization in Japan.
The core of Alfred Nobel's vision was the belief that committed individuals can make a difference. In awarding this year's Nobel Peace Prize to Nihon Hidankyo, the Norwegian Nobel Committee wishes to honor all survivors who, despite physical suffering and painful memories, have chosen to use their costly experience to cultivate hope and engagement for peace. Nihon Hidankyo has provided thousands of witness accounts, issued resolutions and public appeals, and sent annual delegations to the United Nations and a variety of peace conferences to remind the world of the pressing need for nuclear disarmament. One day, the Hibakusha will no longer be among us as witnesses to history. But with a strong culture of remembrance and continued commitment, new generations in Japan are carrying forward the experience and the message of the witnesses. They are inspiring and educating people around the world. In this way, they are helping to maintain the nuclear taboo, a precondition of a peaceful future for humanity. Now, this group got on my radar in August. There was an August 6th piece in the New York Times, an opinion piece, The Last Survivors Speak. Mm. It's time to listen. And it goes through the founding of this organization, as well as some of these witness testimonies, what these people saw and experienced. And the people who are counted as Hibakusha are those who lived through the attack, as well as those who were in utero when the attacks happened, those who were conceived in the months following, who bear the proof of these attacks in their very genetic makeup.
Wow.
And the devastating effects that these bombs have had for generations in Japan. So the work that these people are doing of bringing these very personal stories forward and saying, we bear the scars not only on our skin, but on every piece of who we are. It's powerful. And it's, we need to listen. We cannot allow our world to fall to nuclear war.
Amazing. And it's 80 years since this, right? We're going to celebrate acknowledge the 80th anniversary. And those folks are, you know, they're dying off. They're going away. You know, talk about the greatest generation, our World War II great parents and great grandparents and so forth. You know, a lot of folks don't remember. And if there's no remembering, if there's no acknowledgement of you know, World War of nuclear holocaust, if you're, you know, sitting on the other side of the world and you're worried about someone, you know, oh, it's just a battlefield, Duke. It's just not a big deal. You know, we're playing with fire. And so congratulations to Nihon Hidankyo. And that is your 2024 Nobel Peace Prize winners. Folks, a little heavy, but appreciate it. Work for peace. Peace and love, baby. You can never go wrong there. Thank you, Jess, for that, bringing that to light. Stick around, folks. We're going to revisit a fantastic interview we did with our buddy, Farmer Hans Brighton Mosier Jr., talking about migrant labor here in the state of Wisconsin, its impact on the economy, the dairy industry, manufacturing, building, construction, agriculture, meat processing, you name it. It's a great spot. Hans is going to be here coming up next. Stick around.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For AM 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. This weekend, organizations are encouraging people to shop locally as they begin their holiday shopping. Ann Wiegman of the Wisconsin Downtown Action Council says that Small Business Saturday was made for Wisconsin communities.
When American Express started this in 2010 and started advertising Small Business Saturday, I said, wow, this is an event that's made for downtowns, because in Wisconsin, about 90% of the businesses that are downtown are locally owned. So that's a pretty important number. It's a pretty big impact.
Wiegman says you can see what's happening for Small Business Saturday where you live by visiting your local chamber or downtown organization website. The Thanksgiving football tradition continues today. With more, here's Civic Media's Terry Barr.
A tradition continues with an expanded football schedule this holiday weekend, including games on Black Friday. Football and Thanksgiving have been served up together for more than 140 years, the first featuring college teams, Yale and Princeton. The NFL took over the holiday games in 1920. By the 1930s, Detroit became the regular host to these yearly games. The Packers kicked off one of the longest runs as a Lions opponent on Thanksgiving. Green Bay and Detroit also hold the record for one of the holiday games with the highest scores. The Packers won this one in 1986, 44-40. This year, Green Bay hosts the Miami Dolphins at Lambeau Field on Thanksgiving night. So far, the Packers' record during these holiday matchups: 15 wins, 20 losses, and 2 ties. I'm Terry Barr.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go. Download the free Civic Media app on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. From the Western Wisconsin Civic Media Newsroom, I'm Jimmy Cuska for AM 1490 WLCX and lacrosseeagle.com. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. It's been a long road for the live-action version of Snow White, but there is now a release date in sight. The Disney flick has been in development since 2016 and was supposed to be released in 2024. Greta Gerwig wrote the script for the film, which stars Rachel Zegler and Gal Gadot. Snow White will hit theaters March 21st of 2025. Hollywood is full of crazy stories, and actor Josh Brolin has a doozy he shared in his new memoir, From Under the Truck. Brolin tells the story of when he met acting legend Marlon Brando. Brolin attended a dinner at his stepmother Barbara Streisand's house, along with John Travolta and Kelly Preston. Brolin recalled that Brando showed up with a bleeding leg because he stopped to pull someone from a mudslide on the way to the party. Travolta, a well-known Scientologist, noticed and told Brando he had just gotten to the next level as a Scientologist and said he could heal him. Brolin recalled watching Danny Zuko heal the Godfather, one of the most surreal of his life. It was surreal just reading that. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy sky tonight, scattered flurries, and a low in the mid-teens. For tomorrow, a gradual clearing but a brisk breeze, staying cold and highs in the low 20s. Mid-20s for highs for the rest of the holiday weekend. Temps nudge closer to 30 to start early next week. It's 24 right now.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Allbus Show.
Zomers, are you a Netflix and chill guy?
Do you know what Netflix and chill means?
I thought it just meant watch something on Netflix together.
You say that's what you're going to do, but you're really having them over there for sex.
This is why nobody wants to come to my place anymore. I say, hey, you want to come over and have Netflix and chill? People keep saying, well, no, I don't think so. I'll take it back. And I just thought they were being rude.
I do have Netflix, though.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, join us next time for a special edition of the show. We'll look at Black Friday deals and look back at a couple of great interviews of the year. Join us then.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. This is Jess P.S., his producer. We're wishing you a very, very happy Thanksgiving. For the final two segments of today, we are revisiting our interview with farmer Hans Breitenmoser about the impacts of Trump's proposed mass deportations, picking up from the third segment of Tuesday's show. Hope you enjoy.
I might be easy, but I ain't cheap, Jess. Folks, I'm jazzed as hell to introduce to you right now Hans Breitenmoser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin. He was recently featured in an article, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We discussed it at length, and I guess it was last week. Hans got word that we were talking about him. His ears were ringing. And he's also a friend of the Civic Media Network, goes on some of the shows around here. So this is our first time meeting and talking. Hans, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show, man. Thanks for showing up, man.
Well, thank you very much for having me and allowing me to talk about this very important issue and also allay any concerns that some of my friends might have that I was a hardcore Trump voter.
Yeah, right. So
I want to get that out of the way right now.
Certainly.
Off.
All right. So let's address that right off the bat. The article written by Rick Barrett, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, from November 18th. Mass deportations would devastate dairy farmers and other businesses. And you were quoted extensively in this article talking about farming. They wanted to talk about manufacturing as well. And when we were discussing it, and Jess, you can check me if I'm wrong here. Mm-hmm. I think I was very angrily questioning because it wasn't you per se, Hans. It was the reporting of Rick Barrett and Journal Sentinel, not only doing a fine job, a hard job, I wouldn't want that job, but they did not, when they did this article, talk to you, ask you what your political persuasion was. And I thought that was very important, given the fact that we do have lots of rural Republican farmers that are employing undocumented migrant workers on a regular basis, but then also voting for Trump. And that kind of, you know, I was laying that situation out. And I said it a few times, Hans. I'm not saying he did. I didn't check the tape, but I'm pretty sure I gave myself enough room. So, Hans, thank you. Would you please say for our audience, then, sir, before we get into the employment of migrant workers and the effect of mass deportation on Wisconsin's dairy farms and on prices and on industry, the economy in general, would you mind sharing with our audience how you voted this last election cycle?
Well, I did vote for Kamala Harris.
All right. A good man. All right. Woo.
Now, huge weight just lifted off of Tom.
I'm so glad I gave myself wiggle room on that. So, Hans, are you unique amongst your neighbors in Merrill in Upper Wisconsin?
Yeah, for sure. So you're absolutely forgiven, and I don't mean to give you a hard time.
That's really, all right, man.
Give him a hard time.
I saw this as an opportunity for me to use this little bitty platform that I have here as a result of that article to try and set the record straight, not about my voting patterns and history, but rather about the fact that there's a lot of good people in the great state of Wisconsin and all over this country who have been demonized and otherized and just absolutely dragged through the mud and accused by our politicians, Donald Trump, Tom Tiffany in my area, of being these horrible, god-awful criminals. And I just know better. I know, I've worked alongside so many people foreign-born people, my parents among them. I mean, my parents were immigrants a generation ago from Switzerland. But the point of it is, you know, I work with these folks and just, you know, super hardworking people doing work that otherwise wouldn't get done, supporting an economy. And they've been turned in, you know, and demonized. Yeah. And so it's just so troubling, and it just hurts my heart, and the stupidity of it all. I mean, you know, you had Maggie on earlier talking about the numbers. You know, anybody that can do simple math should understand that if you are able to wave a magic wand and remove 5 to 11 million people from an economy that's already short of workers, it's not going to do great things for our economy, and certainly not for our rural economies where I'm from.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin. We're going to talk about migrant labor here in the dairy farms. Now, Hans, I don't know if you know this, but people that listen to this show and know me certainly do. I worked on my neighbor's dairy farm when I was growing up. And my senior year in high school, man, I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning every single morning before going to school to help do the chores on the farm. And I got to ask you, and read the article, you milk your cows 3 times a day? We only did it 2x a day. What's the deal, man? What were we doing wrong, Hans? I never figured that one out.
Well, you know, when I was a kid growing up, we used to milk our cows 2x a day as well.
Yeah.
But the dairy industry, like so many things, has evolved, and we've come to discover that cows would just as well be milked 3 times a day as 2x a day, because they give a lot of milk, and so it's just healthier for the cows, and it makes the cows more productive as well. So that's why we milk them 3 times a day.
Wow, and that's a lot of work. The farm I was on had about 100, 125 milking cows, and of course some heifers and calves, and you know, beyond that, and one lucky bull when the breeders didn't work. But you got like 400 cows that you're milking 3 times a day. What kind of workforce does that take?
Well, so there are about a dozen people who work on my farm, and a lot of them milk cows, as you can imagine. We've got 2 people per shift, and every cow is milked every 8 hours. So right now my workforce, 10 out of the 12 people are from Mexico. They are foreign born folks. And I know this to be true of most of the farms, that I can think of off the top of my head. I mean, if they've got north of 200 cows, they have somebody working for them. If not, darn near everybody who works for them, it has, you know, is coming from a different country. I happen to be sitting in Abbotsford right now. I'm from Merrill, but I'm in Abbotsford right now as I'm on my way to Menominee to pick up my kid from Stout. But go to Abbotsford, Wisconsin, everyone, and without foreign-born folks, Abbotsford ceases to exist. Abbotsford is a very rural community. But it has a huge, huge labor force that works in the packing plant here. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about dairy directly, but we also talk about the packing, the meat packing industry. And like it or not, a lot of the folks that work in that type of job are also foreign born. So and while every employer, whether it's in hospitality, manufacturing, construction, dairy, vegetables, et cetera, all employers are obligated to ask for documentation so that they can have an I-9 form on hand.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I don't know the statistics, but it's an open secret that a lot of people's documentation is questionable, you know. And so why not just face reality and say, okay, how can there be a legal path to maybe not citizenship, if that makes people all nervous, but certainly a path for legal work in this country.
Yeah, work permits.
Because we rely on these people to make the economy run. And if you remove these people from the economy, it is going to it's really going to hurt. And it's really going to hurt rural areas. I can't stress that enough. I was on the Lincoln County Board for 10 years, and I know what small rural counties face. I mean, we've been counting paper clips for years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take away a big part of the population, it's going to have an impact on everything that goes on in these rural counties. So I just want people to understand how important this demographic of people is to our economy.
Hans, I often wondered about how the workaround is. As you mentioned, all these industries, construction, meatpacking, manufacturing, dairy, farming, agriculture, lots of foreign-born workers, undocumented. But if they fill out a W-4 and an I-9, and that information, to your knowledge, is what it is. I ask it for, they gave it to, they fill out a Social Security number. As far as you're concerned, as far as the state of Wisconsin, that is legit. That's that person, and people just go on their way. Has there ever been any sort of audit of that, either by the federal government or by the state government, with regards to, I-9 forms?
Well, again, my job as an employer or prospective employer, and everyone else's job, whether that's a restaurant or a hotel or a meatpacking plant, our job is to ask for documentation, assume that it is legitimate documentation, because if we don't assume that it's legitimate documentation, then aren't we're racially profiling people, right?
Right.
So our job is not to, that's the federal government's job to, stick a flashlight up there. I'm not, so my job is to have an I-9 form on file for all of my employees. And if Donald Trump or Uncle Sam or Johnny Law comes knocking, then okay, tell me what I've done wrong here. But my whole spiel here, Dom, is I think just more important than that, which is to say the honoring of work and the appreciation of people who are in this country doing hard work, and instead of using them as political, cannon fodder, we should be appreciating people who are doing work that otherwise wouldn't get done. That's what sort of irritates me.
Oh, certainly. Well, and it's even, and Hans,
we're not honoring that.
Certainly not honoring that. In fact, I mean, they're dishonoring it by using it as a political tool to divide people and to make the others, as you mentioned, and to give someone, someone to point their finger at. And that's been done very well by the Republicans. My rage on this is, along with the disrespect of the work, because I worked on the farm, Hans. That was the hardest work I ever did. Don't want to work that hard again the rest of my life. Is a lot of those folks that voted for Donald Trump, if that's the case, if they're the megas and the conservatives, voted for him to basically, if the large percentage of the workforce is undocumented, the I-9s are inaccurate, they come in and start pulling people out, they voted for the deportation of their own workforce. I don't understand how that is a rational decision, Hans. What do your conservative farmer friends say to you?
It's not a rational decision, and so I'll point out a couple of things. Number one, dairy farmers and rural folks are not unique in our ability to vote against our own self-interest.
Certainly.
Okay. Right. Look at what about the union vote, right? I mean, there's been plenty of people who voted for folks that were not going to do them any good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to share a little story with you real quick, if I may.
Please.
That speaks directly to your head scratching question, because I too scratched my head about that. How could so many rural people vote for Donald Trump, knowing what this was going to turn out to be? Right. A good guy that I know that provides a service to our farm once a month. He's an American. He votes Republican. He's very conservative, but he's a very, very good guy. I mean, we're talking volunteer firefighter. Him and his wife fostered children. He's just a hardworking guy, and then he farms on the side and so forth and so on. Well, he was at my farm here right after the election, and I was feeling pretty gloomy. And I made some smart-ass comment about how he and I were both going to be out of work pretty soon, because if Donald Trump rounds up everybody and sends them all home, I said he and I won't have any work to do. And he said to me, he said, well, I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, they're only going to deport the illegal folks. And right there, finally, a little light went on in my dim little skull that said, holy smokes, we've been having the wrong conversation. Because Kevin, the fellow that I was talking with, it never occurred to him that when he goes to different farms to do the tasks that he does on these farms, it never occurred to him that the people who he's working alongside might be here without proper documentation. And the reason why that never occurred to him is because the guys that he works with and the gals that he works with are good, hardworking, decent, honest, likable people.
Yeah.
And in his mind, all the illegal people are these scary television images that he's seen on Fox News and on all the political ads and so forth. So he's disconnected from reality because he thinks all the illegals are all these people that are flooding across the border and doing all this crime. Those are the people who are going to get sent back.
Right. Hans, I got to pause right there. 1 second, man. Hold that thought. We got to take a quick break. Do you have time on the other side of a 2-minute break to stick with me for like another 8 minutes?
For sure. I want to finish my story.
Yeah, please do. Hold it right there, folks. This is the Dom Salvi Show. That's our new friend, Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Eagle 1490 AM. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Out here in the middle of these acres, it can feel like you're the only person on earth. That's how it feels when you're struggling with your mental health. But you don't have to feel alone. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dom Salvio Show. This is Jess P.S., his producer here, wishing you all a very, very happy Thanksgiving. We are still revisiting that interview with farmer Hans Brighton Moser, picking right back up.
You were talking about your friend, your conservative, your good guy, conservative friend, Kevin, who comes around once a month. And we were concerned in your conversations, making a smart ass comment, I think you said, Hans, that you're going to both be out of a job if Donald Trump gets his mass deportations. And Kevin wasn't worried about that because his opinion was that only the illegals, quote unquote, Hans, would be deported. Please continue, sir.
And so there's. My point to the story is that there's a misconception by plenty of rural folks who work on farms and in the meatpacking industry and in the local restaurants and so forth, that the folks that they work alongside, the foreign-born, you know, Mexicans, Hondurans, El Salvadorans, what have you, the folks that they work alongside, well, of course they must be here legally because they're such good people. These guys have been told that the illegals are all these folks that are committing crimes. So, you know, it's easy for us progressives to be crabby with our neighbors and say, well, my goodness, how could these folks, you know, vote this way? And how could they be such bigoted xenophobes and so forth? Well, you got to understand that they've been misled by the rhetoric and so forth on TV. Because when I said, Kevin, I said, you understand surely that a lot of the people that you work with, their documentation may not in fact be legit. And I swear to God, his face changed and it had not occurred to him. It simply had not occurred to him. And we both then, I believe, had an epiphany right there, because it didn't occur to him that a lot, if not most of the people that he works alongside for his job are in fact here illegally. And I had not. I had an epiphany because I just didn't realize that there was that level of misunderstanding. And I don't want to use the word ignorance, because I don't believe for a minute that he's an ignorant guy. Don't misunderstand me. But there's a but you know.
But if he used but Hans, does he take that knowledge and use it? Because otherwise it's willful ignorance. You know what I'm saying? Once you become aware of that, Hans, isn't it upon them, is their responsibility to then perhaps adjust their mindset and their attitude with the new information that's come to light, man. Tom. You know what I mean?
For certain, yeah. I'm not letting anyone off the hook here.
Sure.
But what I am saying is that how do we move forward, right? Well, it's by having these types of conversations and enlightening our conservative brothers and sisters as to the reality of what's going on. Because you know as well as I do, you know, there's a heck of a lot of misinformation coming over the, you know, I mean, we're talking decades of, you know, right-wing radio and all the rest of it. So, and when you have politicians who are willfully ignorant and who are willing to, you know, make as much hay with this type of stuff as they possibly can, that's the part that's disgusting. I can forgive, you know, the Kevins of the world to a certain extent, but I have a real hard time forgiving politicians who will, you know, create advertisements around, you know, this criminality and all this type of stuff, and choose to ignore facts just to get votes. I mean, that's, you know, I'm sure you're rolling your eyes there at my outrage, because I mean, how naive am I? This has been going on for years, but it's still bothersome, and that's why I appreciate the opportunity to come on and you know, just sort of try and be a voice for people who don't have a political voice in this country.
Well, it's political whether you're involved in it or not. Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill. Hans, you know, as I look at this, and if we can't, you know, convince people before the election, and which of course is too late now, if and when, you know, the mass deportation starts, then people are going to know. The article that you are mentioned in, Hans, talked about the milk prices being doubled if this were to happen. That seems to me inflationary to me, Hans. If you had to, if I may ask, what does a farmhand get paid, a foreign-born farmhand? And if that job were to be gone and you had to hire, say, your son who you're picking up, you know, someone else, how much more would your payroll increase?
It wouldn't increase. I would have to quit farming. There's nobody out there for me to hire. It's not a matter of me or any other dairy farm or packing plant paying folks less than they could otherwise get away with. It's simply that there are no other people out there. My payroll, depending on the position on my farm, starts at $13, and I've got one guy that with benefits and so forth makes north of $30 an hour. So it kind of runs the gamut depending on how long they've been there and what they do and so forth. And I think you'll find that throughout the, you know, the multiple industries that foreign-born people, you know, the jobs that they occupy. But it's not a matter of pay. This is what people don't understand. If this came to pass, all right, and this was possible, logistically possible, to round up and get rid of this many people, for starters, I don't know how you do that. And that's the only thing that gives me some hope, is that I can't imagine how, you know, again, in an economy that doesn't have enough people, you're going to hire an army of bureaucrats, presumably, to collect all these other folks that are actually doing real work. And you're going to chase them out of the country.
Yeah.
My farm stops working.
We're going to run out of time. I guess we'd be grilling out, man. Hans Brighton Moser Jr. from Merrill, Wisconsin, thank you so much for joining, man. I appreciate it. Please come back around sometime real soon.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thanksgiving. I hope you had a chance to really dig into some gratitude and spend time with your loved ones. Catch me guest hosting tomorrow for the Dom Salvia Show for a very special edition. Oops.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, we'll revisit some of our favorite recent interviews, including children's author Laura Bird and meeting new state legislator Christian Phelps.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6. The Todd Alba Show.
Trevi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse. And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.